Welcome back to the Sexual Wellness Sessions podcast. This fourth series coincides with the publication of my book, The Science of Sex, Every Question About Your Sex Life Answered, which is available to order now. It's an empowering biopsychosocial sexual re-education, answering over 100 of the most asked questions about the psychology, physical and biological functioning, and social parts of sex and relationships. I've never met a person who doesn't have a question about sex, and hopefully this book provides some of the answers. Today we're going to be talking about something which brings up a lot of discussions, quite a lot of debate, quite a lot of differing opinions. We've absolutely seen it change since the internet has become such a big part of our lives, and that is pornography, but particularly the idea of porn literacy and a project called The Porn Conversation. And the founders of The Porn Conversation are actually based out of Erica Lust Films, which is a feminist and ethical pornographer, and they have launched this initiative alongside the pornography company. And so I am really excited that I've got Avril Louise Clark, who is the brand manager of The Porn Conversation. She's a clinical sexologist and also an intimacy coordinator on set for Erica Lust Films, to talk all about some of the misconceptions that we have, how it actually works, why this side of the conversation is really important. Because one of the things that I often say when people ask about pornography is, I think one of the biggest problems is the education gap that we have around it, and the gap in education between real life sex and pornography. And I think, Avril, from what I've seen of the work that you guys are doing, that the biggest intention is to close that gap and to create the education specifically around porn and how we understand it.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's the main mission here with The Porn Conversation, is filling in that gap between, as you mentioned, the fantasy that porn creates versus the reality of realistic, real sexual situations and relationships with oneself and one's sexuality versus, yeah, that fantasy that porn creates. And I feel like that gap there can easily be filled with porn literacy and understanding how we relate to pornography and how we use pornography within our lives.
How would you define porn literacy? I think that's probably like the best place for us to start this conversation, because it's a terminology we're familiar with in the sexual wellness space and as sexologists, but I guess it's something that a lot of people haven't even heard of.
Yeah, absolutely. So porn literacy is based on a decades-old educational framework called media literacy. So actually, although it sounds like something that many of us are not aware of, media literacy is likely something that we all have used once or maybe many times in our lives in school. So it's all about critiquing media. In this case, porn being media, porn is now considered, you know, mass media, and also creating our own meanings from this content. So it's a baseline of questions that we can ask ourselves about the content that we're exposed to or seek out when it comes to porn, especially, and how we can understand that with the lens of a critical mindset and become more conscious consumers of sexualized media.
And conscious consumers, that's an interesting term, isn't it? Because I think so many of the problems I think that we see arising from people watching porn are unconscious assumptions or applications of porn onto real life, and I suppose transferring of information. And so what we're saying with porn literacy is, it's not intended to stop people watching pornography, but it's about to help them understand and build awareness around it. Because the critics of pornography would just say all pornography is bad, you know, we should ban the whole thing, or it should just all be got rid of, it shouldn't exist, you know, so many problems exist out of it. But I think we all know as sexologists, and I mean, I think most people with a layer of thinking about it logically understand that it's not just that simple. And that the internet is such a big part of our lives, and that we know that pornography is such an enormous amount of the internet, but that if we're talking about adults here, that there's free will and people are going to watch it, but also younger people, if they're interested, it's almost one of the easiest avenues for them to get sexual information from, because it's under 5 seconds worth of typing into search engines.
Right. I think that there's like two main things that really relate to what you were just speaking about. I think that one thing is that there is this humongous lack of sex education out there. So we're not providing information, and I mean evidence-informed information, inclusive information, scientifically sound information for young people especially. And, you know, I speak to adults as well, because I'm not pretending like any of us really received the best sex education ourselves. Porn is going to be that avenue, that space for them to find out about sex, right? It seems like for many young people, that realistic source, well, if no one's talking to me about it, and this is something that now I'm understanding is too, I don't know, dirty, too shameful to be curious about, then this is the space where I can see it. And then obviously we'll probably go into this a bit more, but when we use porn literacy and we are really, really campaigning for porn literacy to be included in sex education, we're not ignoring the subject of porn anymore. We're saying, hey, you're a curious individual, and this speaks for adults as well. You're trying to find out information. You want to understand and explore your sexuality in a quote unquote safer space, right? This doesn't involve actually physically being intimate with another person, but it's like a medium that you can use to find out more about, I don't know, maybe you're interested in learning about different sexual practices. Maybe you're exploring your identity. And so this might be an avenue for you to see that. And then the other hand is this idea that blocking and banning is the answer when it comes to pornography. And I think that many sexologists and sex educators, especially ones that are trying to build this framework of sex positive parenting, will tell you that blocking, banning, this includes a lot of shaming language. This includes a lot of ideas that sex is something that we shouldn't be curious about, we shouldn't be talking about, that it's going to make a young person feel that, you know, not only are if they're seeking it out, but there's many young people that are coming across it through pop-ups, through being shown media sent on a WhatsApp group or in school on the way to, or, you know, on the way to school on the bus. So there's all these opportunities for a young person to be shown these forms of sexualized media as well. And in those cases, I ask the parents, well, what does blocking and banning do then? Why don't we have these conversations around pornography with young people? Because it is so easily available. And I feel like it's very, very likely a young person is going to come across it, whether they're looking for it or not. And so don't they deserve the information to know how to deal with this when this moment does occur? Will they have that space to talk about it with a trusted adult and really explore their emotions around what they're seeing and what they're feeling? So this is kind of my mission against this whole banning, blocking, anti-porn movement is just, don't young people deserve better than that?
But we know that not all porn is created equal. So in no way are we saying that there isn't damage that can be done, like there can be anything, but we're no way are we saying that, you know, there is obviously some pornography which depicts a lot of violence and really rough sex and inappropriate and, you know, unethical materials a lot of the time. But I suppose what we're talking about is from Erica Lust Films is the whole point is that it's a feminist company with ethical values, it's paid for porn. And so I suppose when we're talking about these conversations, we're obviously framing it within, you know, your stance as a company who are deliberately trying to do something differently within the space, are deliberately trying to do this the right way. And I think that there's something in that, isn't there, that you said there, which is, if we're embedding these conversations into sex education and we are trying to, I suppose, get to people before they get to porn, so that by the first time they're watching it, and, you know, unfortunately we know that, you know, young people are getting to pornography a lot earlier than they should be and a lot earlier than the sex education can, I suppose, be framed around. But we're saying that if we have those conversations in a way which is non-judgmental, you know, non-shaming, then as and when it might unexpectedly get to them or out of the control of parents, so as you just said, someone in a WhatsApp group at school or someone at school showing them something, then at least we stand a chance of them being able to ask the questions or being able to think about it. And one of my previous podcast guests was a sex educator called Sarah Sproul, and she was saying the perfect example with having spoken to her children about sex was that they were walking down the street and there was a used condom on the pavement.
Mm.
And they walked past it and her son's friend said, "What's that?" And her son said, "Oh, that's a condom." And he said, "What's a condom?" And then that's how the conversation started. And she was saying, there's no preparation for that. You can't prepare for walking down the street and there being a condom on the street. You can't prepare for, you know, these moments are going to happen whether we like them or not, try and control them or not, because we can't control everything and we can't control a lot of externally what's happening to us or as and when. And as parents, we can manage the scenarios as best as possible, but we have to, I suppose, plan for the unpredictable nature of this stuff coming up. And maybe, I think this is where the porn literacy, and I know that the porn conversation has resources for parents. So I know that you have resources for young people, resources for parents, and resources for educators. Have I got that right?
Correct. Yes.
And I think that that's where helping parents to feel prepared is such a massive part of it, because this conversation could happen any place, any time. You know, these questions could come, what we feel like as parents, is out of the blue. And so then if we felt reassured, we'd got some resources and stuff built in, that would really help us to know how to answer those questions in the moment.
Exactly. I think that also with, you know, one of the resources that we do provide families is are the conversation guides, right? Which is the really the backbone of the porn conversation, which is these conversations should really, truly begin at home, especially when that is where young people are going to have the most access to the online sexualized media, right? Typically in schools, not as much, but maybe, who knows? But I think these conversations should begin at home, because it really does give families the opportunity to build these conversations also around their own family values. So that's going to be really important too. But I do think that one big kind of hurdle there is, well, how do I begin these conversations? When and at what age do I begin these conversations? And then also we're dealing with families who were never spoken to about sex, likely, or porn, likely ever. And also the way that porn exists today versus when it existed, when maybe these parents were of their children's age. So there's a lot of moments within our conversation guides where we really offer families that support to kind of check in with yourself. Also knowing that it's okay not to know all the answers. It's okay to take a pause and take a break. There's no right or wrong way to do it. It's not just one conversation. So for example, in this case of the condom on the street, right? A pop-up on the computer of a porn website. What do you do in those moments? This is an unexpected opportunity, I would say, to really kind of open that up. And let's say you do find yourself in shock as a parent. You don't really know what to say in the moment. That's okay. We offer kind of talking points, like scripts for really families to be able to follow. So just saying, hey, I don't really know the answer for this question right now, but I promise I'm going to get back to you. or, you know, saying that you just need to take a breather. It's okay to also let your child know, like, hey, I hear you. Not too sure how to approach this right now, but I'm going to get back to you. I promise on that. Making sure that you're also checking in with your own values when it comes to porn. But what we do really try to say and support families on this difficult journey is that whether or not you as a parent like or detest or feel indifferent to porn, it's very, very likely your child is going to be exposed to it at some point. And this isn't in any way some sort of like fear-mongering statement. It's just basically saying children and teens report that they really do choose most of their sexual situations and behaviors and actions on the input from their families, from their parents, more than the media, more than their friends. And so this is going to be a moment for you to really recognize that them coming to you with curiosity is a really critical moment, but not something that you typically need to get 100% correct, because there is no correct way to do it. It's just opening that door and making sure that your child knows that that door is open for them.
And what are your impact reports showing? Because I know you guys have impact reports about the porn conversation.
Right. So, yeah, we are officially launched 2 years ago with our conversation guides and curricula. And we've received on average each day about 90 downloads of our educational materials. We've just recently released all of our materials into Spanish, French, and German. So we're analyzing that a bit closer at the moment. Still, our English materials are the top downloaded guides and curricula. But it's been really nice to see just kind of this constant flow and this constant community effort. So that impact, along with also the feedback and the reviews that we consistently receive from parents, from educators, has been very, I don't know, heartwarming, to be honest, because we worked really hard on creating these materials, creating the sex education that we were hoping as children that we received ourselves. And so for me and for Dr. Bianca Laureano, who is the co-author of these materials, this is a really impactful moment. I think also based on the feedback that we're receiving from the impact that's happening on our communities, we're always consistently working to make them better, right? The culture changes around sex, the information changes. And so we really want to make sure that's reflected consistently.
And how did you get into working with the porn conversation? Because I think that's, so you're a clinical sexologist.
Right.
And for me, there's something really interesting in the fact that, well, you're also an intimacy coordinator on Erica Lust Films. But I guess for me, I'm really interested to know that there's someone with clinical experience. I'm also a certified sexologist. But behind the camera and behind the scenes when it comes to pornography, I think that that for me feels like a really reassuring thing. Is that because of the Erica Lust Films has this very ethical framework for how they direct and produce porn, and that's why there are intimacy coordinators and sexologists behind the camera and behind the scenes?
Yeah, so I started working initially with the porn conversation. So I am a clinical sexologist, but I was working a lot in therapy. I was also working on organizing, you know, my heart really is in education more than in the therapy room. I feel like that's where I feel most drawn towards. And so I was working on organizing events here in Barcelona, back home in the United States. And I was offered the project, the Porn Conversation, by Erica Lust and her husband Pablo, who founded the project. And the idea was to really, really revamp it. It had existed for years before, but it had this, you know, it was becoming a much bigger topic of discussion. And I think as not only parents, but also as porn producers, porn directors, trying to reinvent how we consume and how we create porn, it was essential for them to talk about this and provide this resource for other parents. And so I started working on that. I started rewriting the conversation guides, working on creating the curriculum, because also I think there's a huge need for sex education. I think it's lacking greatly. And so I think that if there was more easily, accessible sex education materials, and not only that, but sex education that was pleasure-based and informed and more inclusive, that was something that I thought was integral to the project. So we worked on that, creating educational videos. And then when the project relaunched, I wanted to get more involved with the filming aspect of it. I was curious about, well, I know this is a ethically produced production process. What does this really mean? What goes on behind those scenes? How do we protect and take care of the performers and the sex workers? And I learned that we obviously these actions were being taken place, but it was of interest to me to start training to do that as well. So it obviously I'm the first sexologist that's actually been on set and acting as an intimacy coordinator. I feel like it aligns really greatly because of my knowledge and my practice in clinical settings, being able to offer that safer space for people. And so it became a really nice opportunity for them to allow me to be on set and to work on improving the structures of creating that role on Erica Lust Films. And it's been amazing. I've been on many different films, worked with many different sex workers and performers, and it's something that I feel I really try to advocate for, and I think any intimacy coordinator will, but especially within the porn industry, right? I know it's like becoming more of a common role in Hollywood, but it's something that still lacks greatly within the adult industry. And I know our films do not relate to a lot of films out there the way that they're produced. I mean, there's maybe about 20 plus people on set versus I've spoken with sex workers who produce films that go out oftentimes on tube sites. And maybe there's like two people in the room. You know, I think like what really holds true is also our cinematography values. If you look at our films, the lighting, the storylines, the costumes, the makeup, it's just absolutely incredible. So being able to then provide that support for the sex workers before they get on set, understanding that this is going to be a lot of people, this is going to be a really long shoot day, maybe much longer than they would be typically used to if they've worked in more mainstream production companies. And then also in post-production, walking away from this, how are you feeling? How do you feel the experience went? What do you feel like could have been better? Walking them through the consent and boundary conversations, talks, the STI testing. This was all, and still is, a really, really incredible experience to be a part of. And it's really nice to know that, you know, not only am I supporting the sex workers and making a safer production process for them, but also the whole crew of, you know, mainly women is absolutely incredible to be a part of. Working with female directors, working with such a diverse crew really allows us to create that porn that I hope transcends onto the screen. I think it really does, because it is just so wildly different. And I think it's really clear when you check out our sites.
Mm. And I guess I wonder, it seems both logical and quite ironic that a porn company would be setting up the porn conversation as a sideshow. do you think that someone like Erica Lust Films, do you think that actually like a pornography company launching this kind of initiative are the best placed people to provide the information because of everything that you just said, because you're not sandwiching necessarily, but there is an element of that, isn't it? That you're kind of approaching it from both sides, like top down and bottom up.
Yeah, I would say 100%, absolutely. I think that it makes sense to me that we're the ones providing this resource, because when we talk about porn literacy, a big part of it is understanding the fantasy versus the reality of real life sex, of relatable experiences versus the fantasy that porn creates. And so who better to do that than people actually in the industry and people who are working so closely with sex workers and understand the reality of the porn industry. I think that if we are going to compare ourselves to maybe the more on the opposite side of the spectrum, right, we have a very neutral approach to porn. We're not promoting it in our educational resources. Porn literacy is great because it's very neutral. It's saying, hey, whether you like it or not, you deserve this understanding and this framework. So here it is, if and when you find porn one day. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have the big anti-porn movement, which is all about blocking, all about banning, all about this idea and understanding that all sex workers don't really, you know, have that autonomy, that they don't choose to be there and to be doing this work. And I think that is, it only adds to the struggles of many of the sex workers I work with that are consistently campaigning for their own workers' rights and human rights. And the understanding that many of them and all of them who I'm working with choose this work. They just are, you know, asking for the same rights and protections of any workers. And so it's important that we are the ones creating this because we're able to add that transparency and the understanding of what the porn industry is about. And so I think that being that reliable source only adds to being able to then educate and understand. So my work with then being able to go on set has only added to the educational factor and my understanding and what I'm, how I'm able to teach porn literacy, because I can really truly say what is happening, right? And so it's that really nice moment to kind of have that full circle explanation, right? One thing that I think teenagers specifically are very interested to hear is, you know, when they watch porn or just if you watch any Netflix series, right, you're really drawn into the storyline. You're really drawn into what's happening. You truly believe what's going on. And so one thing that I always like to talk about is like, you know, how we take bathroom breaks, how we have lunch breaks, how we talk about consent and boundary talks, the sex box, the contraceptives that are used in the filming, and how the sex workers do talk about their likes and dislikes and what are they feeling today and what are they not. And so it's a shock to many because, I mean, honestly, when I'm on set, it's very emotional sometimes. I wish that these conversations around consent and boundaries was actually happening in real life. But in reality, most of the real life sexual situations I found myself in, and I think many would agree, have not been that in depth, have not been that, safe as they are in a porn set.
And I think, again, we have to caveat that by saying Erica Lust Films is a company which prides itself on ethical pornography and all of these principles being in place, and obviously back to the point that not all porn is created equally and not all companies or producers or directors have the same principles in place. The difference is Erica Lust Films, it's paid for pornography, isn't it? That's a big part of it. So we know that so much
right
free porn might be created in a different way or with different mm-hmm. principles, or there aren't so many implications put in. But I think that you made a point there about porn literacy being quite neutral in that it's not encouraging people to watch porn. It's not saying everyone should watch this. It's just saying it's there in the world. So if, as when you come across it, if you decide you want it to be a part of your life, if you make that choice, this is some information for you that might be helpful to consider. That's essentially the principle, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. That's why I always say it's like a very porn neutral approach. And I do agree with what you were saying before about not really having the transparency, I think, is one of like our values, transparency of other porn production companies. I think that would really change the conversation here, because also I think it's impossible to know without that transparency whether or not this film that you're watching was ethically produced, and then how does that production company define an ethical production process. For us, it exists behind the paywall because we believe in fair pay. So making sure every single person who was involved in the making of this film was paid fairly. And so that's why we really promote paying for your porn. And that will directly impact the creators, the sex workers, directors, makeup artists, catering, interns, everyone who was a part of this production process.
So I went to actually a talk by Erica Lust recently in London. And one of the things she mentioned is that we have these conversations about the negative impacts of porn, but so much of that is sometimes just even the basic misunderstanding. So porn wasn't designed as an educational tool. You know, we call it the adult entertainment industry. So, you know, a lot of what people's criticisms are is that young people are getting access to this. And the thing that she was saying is, but this is adult entertainment. No one is designing pornography for young people. The access to it is the bit that makes it available, or the internet, or the way that people can access it. But it wasn't designed to be an educational material. It was designed to arouse. It was designed for entertainment. You know, the clues in the name, adult entertainment, is designed to create arousal, designed for people to desire. But there's something in that, isn't there? And I think it's a point that I always make if people are asking about this, is it wasn't designed to be this educational resource for people. But the internet really, I suppose, imploded when smartphones became such a big part of our lives, because that meant that anyone could get access to anything at any time. But I think it's a useful reminder when we're having these kind of conversations that the focus is young people have become a part of the conversation, but these resources, these things were never designed for young people, targeted for young people. And when I mean that, I mean like, you know, young adults. I'm not talking about children.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's definitely a message we tried to bring across consistently, which is porn is not sex education. But I think on the other hand, this is why we created these materials, is because we think that porn belongs in sex education, the topic of it, right? It's too large to ignore. Like you said, it's very accessible. And we don't want there to be any sort of idea that what we're even creating here at Arcalest is meant to be educational for young people. Porn is for an over 18 audience. And I think existing beyond the paywall adds that extra protection, but also it's for adults. It's for us to consume, us to enjoy, us to share with our partners, us to use as a positive reference of sexual liberation and sexuality and feminism. And so this is where the conversations need to happen. This is where media literacy and porn literacy are important, because yes, agreed, it's entertainment for adults, not education, but also, hey, they might come across it. So what are you going to do about it as a trusted adult in this child's life, as a parent?
Do you think that then, so porn literacy and media literacy should be embedded into and built into our sex education programs? So we can't really have a conversation about sex education without mentioning pornography.
I agree. I think that a big part of the porn conversation is that we say, you know, we're creating free and easily accessible and inclusive sex education, beginning with the topic of porn literacy, because oftentimes this idea that porn has become the new sex education is something I see repeated over and over and over again, but then it just stops there. And then no one's really saying, okay, so what are we
offering a solution?
Yeah, like, what's the solution? Yeah, I agree completely. It's become the new sex education. So now what? And then it wasn't spoken of past the whole blocking, banning organizations that are out there. There wasn't this other solution for it. And so this is why we've created what we've created.
And it's just, I guess, for me, the idea of blocking and banning all pornography, I think it would be impossible given how much of the internet is pornography. And I know there's scary statistics about how pornography is something like, I couldn't even tell you what it was, but a huge, huge amount of the internet. So that would feel like an unfathomable task anyway. But the younger generations are more and more tech savvy, tech able, tech understanding. You know, the idea that I think that the people doing the blocking and banning, that there aren't people that could get around that incredibly quickly and easily and therefore get access to the content. And I suppose that just kind of pushes it underground more. But the idea that you could just do that and that people wouldn't find a way around it, I think, doesn't really make any sense to me, because I'd imagine that the first thing people would do would be to work out how to get around, you know, the limitations and the walls, and it's not going to not exist. I mean, we have depictions of, I suppose, like caveman versions of pornography, you know, like etched into cave walls and things. It's obviously been there since the beginning of time, but I think the way that it exists has completely changed. And, you know, I think back when I was younger or at school, everyone used to talk about buying magazines, and then it became DVDs, and then it was videos, and then it was DVDs. And obviously now there's no need for any form of access apart from the internet or a smartphone, which everybody has. And so I think it's the way that it's used, or the barriers to it have become massively reduced. And the barriers to all information or to anything because of that, because of smartphones, because of the internet.
Right. I think that the mediums have changed. I think that pornography has always existed. The mediums have changed as far as your access to it. But on the other hand, I always say, like, how great is the internet for young people? I think that there's so much positive information out there as well. I think it's great because, you know, even the porn conversation is able to exist in these same spaces. And so I agree. I think that it often might feel like a click away, but even when, you know, when I was growing up, it was during the, I guess, the, you know, the celebrity sex tape scandal days. I was like a 90s kid, so I grew up in when I was becoming more aware of the topic or theme of sex and sexuality and being a sexual being. I was growing up in Miami in the early 2000s. And so my first exposure and idea about sex and porn, I didn't even have to see it to know about it. I didn't have access to see, you know, the Pamela Anderson sex tape, but I knew about it. And I had this idea in my head about it. And it was being spoken about at school. And I remember just thinking, like, wow, this must be something really bad, but I'm so curious. And so it was just, this is why I think, like, these conversations are super important. Because even if your kids aren't accessing it, or maybe they haven't been exposed to it, that's great. This is a wonderful time to still have these conversations, because there's still going to be a lot of rumors around sex around this time. And it depends. You can't control maybe what your kid's classmate has access to and what they don't, or maybe they have an older sibling who has said something to them. So this is really how this information passes. And so wouldn't you want to be that positive person in the young person's life to then, I don't know, give that first information, share your values as far as, like, what you think.
I suppose it acts as a buffer, doesn't it? I guess that's what I'm taking from this talk with you, is that whether it's the classroom, whether it's education, it's online, it's as parents, if we can get that information out there in a positive way, it's a buffer for potential negative impact, because the way in which pornography is accessed, you know, whether it's deliberate or it's accidental, it's then not landing on something blank with no expectations. It's a little bit informed, I guess. And I guess a bit of information is better than no information.
Exactly. And I think that there's two approaches to this, right? When you have a child or a teenager, you might be in this space where you're like, I'm not too sure what they've heard about this, whether or not it's sex or porn. I don't know if they've been shown something or told something. So there is, in our conversation guides, like two approaches. It's like, so you know for a fact that your child has been exposed to porn, so how are you going to approach this? And also, you have no idea. So if you do know for a fact your child or teen has been exposed to porn, or you've seen it in their browser history, they're looking for it, you can just say, hey, I want to talk to you about something that I know that you've been exposed to. Don't make assumptions that they're seeking this out. Don't use these shaming languages like, who showed this to you? Why are you looking at this? This is not what we do in this family. That's dirty, evil, disgusting. I feel like another approach to this is, yeah, it's creating a barrier, but it's also creating an open door. We don't want to shut children and teens down. We don't want to make them feel guilty or bad about being part of this online sex culture that exists today. It's so accessible. I think that doesn't help. Negativity does not help. And then if you aren't too sure, and you're kind of wanting to create this buffer, this open door, you can always say, hey, bring it back personally. Say, hey, sometimes on my phone, I get these pop-ups. You know, it's like very like of nude people, it's adult content, is what we call porn. Has that ever happened to you? So there's many opportunities to bring this up in a way that doesn't feel like, you know, you're sitting your child down for the talk. You need to prepare something super, super formal, and you got to get it 100% right the first time. So that's an approach that I find that parents find a bit more relaxing and useful.
I think the idea of getting it right all the time is something that I've said a few times on this podcast, that I'm a parent myself and I don't know how to get these conversations right, you know, and I talk about sex every day with adults and talk about sexual problems and, you know, really have pretty like nitty gritty conversations about sex, and I've written about it and I talk about it, but still, my oldest child, particularly when they start to have questions, I still get that panic feeling of, oh, I don't know how to answer this, or what if I get this wrong, or this is really important. And I think sometimes as parents, if we have any indication that we're feeling that way, our natural instinct might be like, avoid, 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 like, shut it down, change the conversation. Right. And I think there's something to be said around the normalizing of the fear of getting it wrong. And that's why, you know, when you said earlier, if you're not sure, saying, God, I'm not sure about the answer to that, but you know what, can I do some research and come back to you? Or, you know, I'd love to sit down and have that conversation with you. Can I just make sure that I feel I've got the right points or something like that? Because it's so normal to care for it to matter. And, you know, I think the reality is we all fear getting it wrong, and then it's going to be our fault that our children, you know, feel like they've got an unhealthy relationship with sex, or that we got it wrong, or, you know, we have so many fears about sex in general, and then we layer on top of it, I suppose, like the parental responsibility that goes with that. But I don't know, if there are any parents listening to this episode, because I imagine that's going to be the group of people that are most interested in hearing this conversation, because it's such a big part of our lives in a different way to how it was for previous generations. I think purely because we didn't all have smartphones or the internet, you know, we had dial-up. I can still remember like the kind of high-pitched noises. Yeah. But if there are parents listening to this episode, what's the one thing you would want to tell them, or one thing you would want to say to kind of help them feel empowered or aware or to know what to do? Is it, as parents, educate yourselves first?
Yeah, I think educating yourselves first is key, but also I think there's you know, this is the reason why we created our guides as scripted materials, because I think there's so much information out there already. It's so easy to just feel not educated enough. I don't know enough. I haven't figured this out yet, how to approach it, but also give yourself some grace and understanding that, hey, this is scary. You just shared yourself as someone that talks about sex, you know, that you're scared. I've had conversations with Erica too, that, you know, this wanting to create this project was because she wasn't sure always how to go about these conversations. Like, this is a very personal experience. You know, I'm not a parent yet, but I can imagine I'm going to be frightened as well. You do have this idea that you want to get it perfect, you want to get it right. But think back to when you were a young person, how would it have felt if even your parents said, thank you so much for coming to me with this information, this curiosity. I think you're so wise. You're so smart. I think you know so much. And there's so much information out there, but I just want to share with you something. I want to share with you how I feel about it. I want you to know that you have a space that you can come to me. That would have been incredible, possibly even life-changing for many of us. And so know that you don't have to have it all correct. You don't have to have it completely right. And you can make these moments into learning opportunities for the both of you. If you have those moments where you do feel like you need a pause, say it. If you're feeling nervous, tell your child this is a nervous conversation for you. You don't have to be that strong, confident parent. You can be that embarrassed, scared parent and just work through it with the child as well. There's just all about creating that framework and knowing that it's not one conversation, it's many conversations.
And is it also about saying to our teenagers, young people, I suppose also maybe, you know, even for this idea about if we're talking about porn with our partners as adults, I guess the main thing is it's okay to ask questions.
If it's okay to ask questions, oh my gosh, yes. I think questions is definitely an important part of the conversation. I think oftentimes we forget that being the adult or being the partner, if you're dealing with you and your partner's relationship with porn, is listening, active listening is just as important as you know, filling in all the silence with thoughts. And being aware of your body language as well. Are you crossing your arms? Are you feeling kind of like tight? Trying to kind of loosen up and make sure you're not giving off that vibe of anger or shame when you're having these discussions.
So it really feels like that gap between expectation and reality, that gap between pornography or pornographic representations of sex and real life sex, it really feels like porn literacy can be the buffer that we need in order to not necessarily close the gap, because I think that so much pornography is designed, obviously, with the intention of not being like real life sex, but is designed to help us with that understanding of that these things can exist both as separate entities, but also as part of our sex lives.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, we talked a lot about the reality versus the fantasy that porn creates. And I think it's important to touch on, well, what are those things and how does that affect us as sexual beings? So it's anything from bodies, large penises, you know, perfectly sculpted vulvas and no body hair, to, you know, how our bodies feel pleasure, you know, the average time sex typically takes, you know, it's not usually an hour as porn likes to make it seem. There's a lot of editing and cuts and lighting and direction that goes on behind the scenes. There's just so many messages. And so that's why I love porn literacy, because it really allows us to pick apart these moments that we oftentimes see in porn. And you're right, I think a lot of times they don't make porn super realistic, but when we don't have that understanding of sex education and we don't use the idea of consent and communication in the bedroom with our partners as adults, we will find ourselves replicating what we're seeing in pornography. And this does not lead to pleasurable experiences. The only way, and this is something that we do teach to teenagers, is the only way to have pleasurable and respectful sexual experiences is through the understanding of consent and the practice of it and communication with partners. Not what you see in porn, not replicating that, not feeling ashamed of your body or your sexuality or your practices based on what you see online, but really listening to you and your partner. And that's the key.
If you've been enjoying these episodes, you may also be interested to check out my book, The Science of Sex, Every Question About Your Sex Life Answered. Written in a Q&A format with questions such as, does our mental health impact sex? Or what's a non-monogamous relationship? And how can we rebuild sexual confidence after a breakup? The book intends to dispel the myth that everybody else is having perfect sex, or that there even is such a thing. It's available to order now, and if you have a second, please rate and review the podcast to help others find it.